This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittline.
Hi, folks. Tonight, it's going to be Cuddle Your Child Night, especially if they are four-leggers, because that's what we're going to be talking about. All of those four-leggers that we love and we kind of just find crossing our paths. I called the show Saving Lives One Wing, One Paw at a Time, because we've all seen injured or abandoned wildlife. And while our hearts go out to them, most of us don't know how best to help. When an injured animal is found, the goal is releasing it back to a natural habitat where it can resume a normal life. And Sue Rin Burns, my guest tonight, is a longtime wildlife rehabilitator. We're going to be talking about what it takes to save these little lives, from housing to feeding and cleaning up after the injured and orphaned animals, right to how such service requires being observant, calm, and able to commit time to their care and well-being. Sue Rin, thank you for taking time out to talk to us tonight. It's great to have you back.
Well, you're welcome. I'm thrilled to be so able to talk to people about it.
Now, the way I got to know you and your wildlife rehab are squirrels and the squirrel stories. Are they the ones who got you on this path in the first place?
Sort of. The first year that I rehabbed, I actually got a lot of birds, which I wasn't licensed to handle. But I also had a few mammals, and one of them was a less than a week old baby red squirrel, who will be known forever as Squirrel Girl. She was just adorable, and taught me a lot.
So when you first got her, how did you find her?
Well, we had been cleaning out the rehab shed, getting ready for baby season. And her mother lived upstairs in the attic, I think, or somewhere in the wall. And I think because we were making such a ruckus in the environment, she decided to move everybody. And in the moving process, this little baby got dropped. And we did our best to get her to take it back. But after about half an hour, I was getting concerned because the baby was getting cold and really crying a lot. And I just said, okay, that's it. We'll take care of her. And we did.
What is taking care of a little squirrel schnutz that young mean? That's a big commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. It means keeping them warm. So I usually do neonates like she was in a plastic bin like most people use for storage. You line the bottom with newspaper, paper towels. You give them something warm and fuzzy to cuddle in. You put a heating pad underneath the bin, but you only put it half underneath the bin so they can get on the heat if they need the heat, or pull themselves off the heat if they don't want to be on the heat. Usually when they're neonates, they just stay on the heat. And then you have to come up with a formula to feed them. I don't recommend that anybody who doesn't have experience feed them, but if you really feel that this animal needs to be warmed up and rehydrated, you just use plain old Pedialyte. And this is where it gets tricky. Squirrels can aspirate really easily, and then they get aspiration pneumonia. And usually that will finish off a really tiny squirrel. So you might want to use a brush feeding technique with a little baby, get the Pedialyte.
What is that, brush feeding?
You take a nice little natural bristle watercolor brush, you dip it into a little Pedialyte, shake off the excess, and put it in the baby's mouth, and they will suck the Pedialyte off. And we do this with birds as well as little tiny mammals. What I usually use is a syringe, but most people don't have those hanging around.
Point. Now, saving little things like this is wonderful and rewarding, but too many people go about it either the wrong way or at all when they shouldn't. So when you are a wildlife rehabilitator and you have to face this audience of red hat ladies or high schoolers or book clubs or whoever you talk to who don't know thing one but feel bad for the little beasties, what do you tell them?
Well, first make sure the animal really needs to be saved, because sometimes, especially with birds, there'll be a little critter on the ground and mama is hanging around watching, waiting for the big scary people to leave. And then she'll come out and either carry that baby back to a nest, or if it's a bird, she'll maybe get that baby a little sheltered and then feed it where it is. You can also try looking around to see if you can locate a nest if it's a bird. I know we were all told when we were kids, don't touch them or their mothers won't take them back. I think they just told us that so we wouldn't bring every baby we found back home. But in truth, you can handle them quite a bit, and most birds have no sense of smell, or it's negligible. It isn't going to bother them. But re-nesting, making sure that baby actually needs your help before you try taking it anywhere. Sometimes that means putting the dog in the house, getting the kids off the lawn. Birds just aren't going to come out if there are people and scary critters around.
What happens if you see something wounded? Sometimes we see a bird with a wing that's obviously out, and it's hopping around and it cannot fly.
Well, that's definitely a situation where you need to do some rescuing. And first thing you want to do is kind of size up the situation, as in figure out what size box you need to find to put it in, or a laundry basket or something of that nature. Get the carrier that you intend to use ready. Then you want to get newspaper, paper towels, something like that to line it with. Then you go about figuring out how to pick up the bird. If it's a songbird, it may not want to be handled, but it can't really do too much to you. If it's more like a bird of prey, like a hawk or an owl or something along those lines, you want to use a technique we call swaddling. You find a large towel or a sheet, come up behind the bird, drape the towel or the sheet or blanket over the bird's shoulders so that it falls kind of in front of the wings. Then you can reach around in front, grab the feet, hold it right against your body, and kind of snug up on the cloth a little bit, and then you can kind of wrap it and put it in a box. You don't want to wrap it too tightly, but you want to wrap it so that it can't get loose in your car or whatever. Then you want to call a rehabber.
I've seen you with an owl in your arms, and the owl does not look happy. What happened
they don't
there?
Like being
what did
handled.
You find?
What was your question?
The question was, I've seen a picture of you trying to get an owl into your vehicle that was obviously hurt, and the owl didn't look very happy. What was that story all about?
Trying to think which photo this might have been. That actually might have been a release picture. We had two barred owls that met in rehab. Usually meeting in rehab isn't good, but these two met and became a pair. So I got to release two instead of one. And, oh, I remember which picture that was now. That was the owl wanting to be released. That's what that was about.
Now, why is pairing not something that usually happens when you've got a couple of kids in the hospital?
Well, it you know, timing is everything. Most of them are on a much different schedule than our domestic animals. You know, there are seasons when they're interested and seasons when they're not, and you have different age groups. And they usually aren't in any condition to even think about that. The two barred owls that met in rehab and paired up, of course, they were calling because they were both winter injuries. Winter is when owls breed. So they were doing a lot of calling. And while their familiar partner's call was not coming back to them, they became very aware of each other and very interested.
Lovely.
Yeah.
You know, one of those blind date stories. how young is too young to learn how to rehabilitate wildlife?
Well,
people, not animals.
Yeah. I know children who've grown up in rehabbing households, who've had chores working around the animals and, you know, helping get food and clean cages and, in some cases, feed injured animals, probably as young as 6. But in order to get a license in New York State, you have to be at least 16. And you have to take a test that the DEC offers every year, usually in April. And I think you have to get at least 80% of the questions right. It's mostly multiple choice. And they do make study materials available for a fee.
So what kind of questions are on the tests? Not that we're looking to crib the answers here, but
yeah.
What kind of things would you be expected to know?
How old is a baby squirrel when its eyes open? Can't remember, it was so long ago. Plus, I think they've changed the test. Things of that nature, though, they want you to have an understanding of how old animals are when different life-changing things happen, like opening their eyes or getting their feathers, when they start to do maybe a little bit of self-feeding. There'd be questions about animal diet, probably a few questions about caging, and also probably a few questions about laws, because there are many.
Why is it talking about laws? I've heard recently about stories where people find fawns, raise them very well, but then the fawns are taken away. The fawns are shot in front of them. Oh, you're not supposed to do this. Bang. Which I find reprehensible.
Yeah, pretty.
Why is it that people are not supposed to save a baby fawn?
Well, because they become very large animals, and the males can become unpredictable and aggressive when their hormones kick in. The other thing is, frequently what happens is people will decide, okay, this isn't fun anymore. Then they take the animal out and release it. And this animal really doesn't know how to survive in the wild. And it thinks that people are friendly. And many of us are, but some of us are not. And it really does put them in a precarious situation.
What is the kind of an animal that cannot be rehabbed?
You mean what kind of physical conditions? Or
both physical conditions and animals which they just feel it's not appropriate to try and rehab them.
Hmm. Well, I think the second question, all rehabbers have their own list of animals they would never try to rehab. We all have them, whether they're on paper or just in our heads. Some people specialize in reptiles and amphibians. Some people would never want to deal with birds. Some people really prefer small, cuddly mammals. Some people only do fawns. A lot of people only do rabies vector species, which...
What's that? Rabies vector
raccoons,
species. That sounds
skunks,
odd.
Bats. Animals that are prone to getting rabies, many of whom are considered nuisance wildlife anyway. And
why would you choose to save that?
Well,
that people would specialize in that.
Obviously, some people think they're wonderful. And that's the thing. They are all wonderful. They all have, they're all amazing in their own ways. And people just seem to have resonate with different animals. I handle a lot of songbirds, which would drive a lot of people crazy because they're a lot of work. They're tiny. If you have a songbird with a broken leg or a broken wing, it's a tiny situation. You have to be really careful and gentle and all that kind of stuff. A lot of people who do birds like doing the raptors, the big birds. In some ways, they're easier. They're definitely easier to work on because you can see what you're working on, and you don't have to feed them as often. But they present their own problems. They all need special caging. All animals need special caging, and they all have very specific diets. And then there's that whole thing about releasing them. You have to have access to very specific sets of environmental situations for pretty much each individual animal. And you have to
When you say specific environmental, what do you mean?
Say among raptors, you have some raptors that are open land hunters. You have some raptors that are more woodland hunters. And you have to know that, and you have to have access to places to release them.
Okay. Whether you live in country or city, does it really matter in terms of the work that you do? Do you have to live, if you will, on site? Or if people are in the suburbs, can they find an animal 10 miles away and take it home to nurture it?
That happens. In some instances, it doesn't matter. And certainly, if you're living in town and you want to do your rehabbing on site, you're going to have good relationship with your neighbors and some room, some space to put up caging and that sort of thing. But I would say it probably doesn't matter. There are also people who have licenses but don't have anywhere to work, so they work with other rehabbers. I know a few people like that.
Okay. How expensive is this for, I'd call it a hobby, but that's a little pejorative.
Yeah, it's more like a habit.
If this is your passion, how expensive is it?
It can add up. I don't have facts and figures in front of me for the cost of it all, but somebody asked me some questions the other day about this very thing, and that made me think about how much I had been utilizing this year. Up until the beginning of last week, say, I had handled about 110 animals, 100 of which were birds. I have been through 17,000 mealworms so far this season, 7 pounds of nestling formula, which is a mix I use to feed baby birds, and occasionally an adult bird that is not doing well. Been through about 6 pounds of milk replacer for mammals, even though I haven't done that many this year. And I've put about 4,100 miles on my vehicle.
That's a fair amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about what it's like when you get to release an animal that you've made its miracle. What's that feel like?
You know, sometimes it's really anticlimactic. And then there are other times when they take off like their tail's on fire, which is what you want. You know, you want them to be racing back to freedom. And recently I did have an experience like that. I had a young female kingfisher come in, and she had flown into a window, and she was pretty out of it. But gradually she came back around, and she didn't self-feed for me, so I had to feed her fish every day. But we kind of got into a routine. I had her for, well, 3 or 4 days, which wasn't long, and that was good because she was really rambunctious. And when I took her out and released her, she was pretty quiet during the ride, but as soon as I opened the back of the car and got the carrier out, she knew something was up, and she didn't entirely trust me that it was going to be something good, but I had to reach in and get her out of her carrier because, of course, she ran to the back of it. And when she got out in the sunlight, she did take off like her tail was on fire. And I could see her realize that she was back in the air. And then I could see her realize that she was in her neighborhood. And boy, she just zoomed around in a huge circle and headed for wherever home was. And that was a great feeling.
Do some animals decide, no, I kind of like it where I am, and I don't want to go out there again? And then what happens?
I haven't had that experience. I have had birds come back to visit. I have had birds buzz the yard. Most of the small mammals that I do, I release pretty far away, so they haven't ever come back to visit me. Well, I can't say that either. I did get in one late season squirrel last year, and I put in a release box for her, about a quarter of a mile down the field across the road. And I did see her again this winter. And the only reason I'm pretty sure it was her was because she sat in the edge of my bird feeding alcove one afternoon looking at the cages in the backyard like, hey, I don't remember this place. But she didn't have any inclination to hang around. It was mostly a place to get food.
Siren, where do you, what's the group that you work with? And if people want to get in touch with them or with you about this sort of thing, how would they do that?
Well, I'm not really part of any network. There are a few rehabbers I network with. We exchange animals, that sort of thing. But there is an organization called New York State Wildlife Rehabilitators Council. Nice Work for short. And you can go to their website. It's nicework.org, and there's all kinds of helpful information. There's a map. You can figure out what region you're in, and you can look for a rehabilitator closer to you. They also put out a newsletter, and annually they host a conference where veterinarians come in and other incredibly generous, experienced people who share their wisdom. They have fluid therapy workshops, wound management, wing splinting, you name it.
Amazing stuff. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Siren Burns, who is a wildlife rehabilitator. It's about saving lives, one wing, one paw at a time. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking more about her experience, and several of you have sent in questions that we'll also be answering. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline next on Empower Radio.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away, a place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree. Yes. That one.
The free to be me, you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline.
And welcome back. We are talking with Sue Rin Burns today about saving lives one wing, one paw at a time. Sue Rin is a wildlife rehabilitator, and we're learning everything that it takes to deal with this sort of thing. And we've gotten in some questions through email. So I want to throw some of these to you, Sue Rin. The first one is from Rachel from Nashua, New Hampshire. She says, my son wants to learn to be a rehabilitator. How does he do that?
Probably she should check with her DEC or the equivalent, or go online and, do some research, see if she can find a group of rehabilitators nearby. She could even check with her vet. If she has a vet who treats pets, they may know who the rehabilitators are in the area.
if the kid is like a Boy Scout, is there a wildlife rehabilitation merit badge or something?
I really don't know. There might be.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So that
I know
that might
a friend
something.
Of mine has a bunch of cages that were built by Eagle Scouts. Each one was an Eagle Scout project, and it bears a little plaque with that scout's name on it.
When you say they built cages, how big were these things?
They're fairly simple. They were maybe 4 feet deep by 8 feet across by about maybe 6 or 8 feet tall. And they used 4x8 panels of, I don't know what kind of fencing it's called. It looks like frontier fencing to me. You know, it's kind of that half round wooden pointy stuff.
And this was for what kind of animals?
I think they were fairly multi-purpose. The three sides were wood, and then the front had a door and screening, like coated metal screening or fencing.
Okay. Sharon from Arlington, Virginia. I have 2 cats and 2 dogs. Can I rehab? That's a big question. I mean, so many of us have pets. I know you had Monkey Pants.
Yes.
And
who I don't
you've
have
got a
anymore.
New one now.
Yeah. I have a new kitty now, a very old kitty. And she's actually out on the porch giving the birds the evil eye, but it's a screened-in porch. Yes, you can rehab if you have pets. You just have to keep them separate. I have a really wonderful old dog. She considers anybody who's in one of the backyard cages under her protection. She does not want anyone coming near her caged critters. But that's her temperament. You know, you may have to divide your fenced yard or something along those lines.
I want to go back to the fact that you say that she's decided they're under her protection. That sounds like it's a story in itself. What's your dog's name, and when did she start showing this kind of behavior?
Chloe. Chloe is a rescue dog herself. I tell everybody she's a former streetwalker from Oswego because she was born on the street, and we got her when she was about 9 months old, and she was a wild and crazy girl. That was a little over 10 years ago. So she's kind of learned right along with us. I mean, initially it was, you know, we just didn't let her near anything. But she knew that there were little baby animals in those bins up on the counter or in the table in the garage. And she's just, you know, she always accepted them as, if they were here, they were hers to protect. Because that's how she is.
Did she adopt any?
No,
one of the
never.
Things, there's
she,
a coyote pup now.
Close.
Would a dog say, that's a puppy, I need to take care of it?
She's never been allowed that close to any of them. I mean, when the birds and squirrels are in cages in the backyard, she occasionally goes over just to get a whiff of them. The squirrels were a challenge. She would look at the squirrels and look at us as if to say, really? But they don't get released here, so that's okay.
Okay. What if you are allergic to cats? Does that mean that you can't deal with wildlife? Sue from Erie, PA wants to know. And that's a point. You know, you don't get a test at the doctor's, oh, it looks like you're allergic to raccoons, because it usually doesn't come up. So when are you going to get a feel that maybe this isn't for me?
Yeah, I have never heard of anybody being allergic to cats and being allergic to other wildlife. I don't know anything about that. I don't have any of those allergies myself, thank goodness. Maybe she could, if she has an allergist, maybe she could test for birds. I haven't run into or noticed a lot of dander on the wild mammals that I've taken care of. I know with cats, that's frequently part of the issue. I don't have an answer for that. Maybe she should talk to her allergist. Okay. Or maybe she should spend a little time volunteering at a rehab center and see how it works out.
Will they take volunteers since doing rehab's work is so specialized?
Some people do. I mean, you know, you're going to be probably doing a lot of cleaning because there's a lot of cleaning involved. You might be doing food prep, cage cleaning, that sort of thing. You're not necessarily going to walk in and immediately be handed a baby squirrel to feed, although probably that is the sort of chore that a volunteer could handle with a little bit of supervision.
Okay. Just an aside question for me, when you were talking about what you put in the cage, you talked about paper towels and newspaper. I'm sure that a lot of people would think, well, what about wood chips, cedar shavings? My guinea pig uses it. Is that dangerous for wildlife?
For different things it would be. I know some birds, you can't use soft wood shavings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nick, here's an important one that I'm sure a lot of younger families want to know. Amanda from Alpharetta, Georgia wants to know, how dangerous is this for a family with toddlers?
Well, you would definitely not have the animals anywhere where the toddlers were getting to them, or vice versa. In a situation where somebody's working with rabies vector species, anybody in that facility who's working with the animals needs to be very carefully trained, and they need to have rabies shots. And the caging for those animals is always double caging. You have them in a cage within a caged-in area. Because some of them, like little raccoons, have nimble little fingers, and they're real Houdinis. You know, they can get out of most anything. But, you know, in terms of rehabbing with kids, you just have to use common sense. You don't want the babies carrying around little baby mammals or playing with little baby birds. It's too stressful for the babies, for the baby animals, and potentially dangerous for kids.
They could get scratched or cut. Little person energy, which is usually like a cross between an air raid siren and a Mexican jumping bean, be too stressful for the rehab things, even if they don't do anything but look at them in the cage?
Well, that's where guidance comes in. You have to teach the kids to be calm and quiet around the animals. And I don't have any children of my own, and I don't usually have people in my rehab space, although occasionally a family will bring me somebody, and I will invite them all in, but I tell them beforehand, okay, you have to be very quiet, and you have to keep your hands to yourself. And usually they are just so amazed to be in the presence of wildness that they comply. Now, on a day-to-day thing, it might be a little different, but that's been my experience.
Okay. Back to our squirrels. Helen from Norristown, Pennsylvania. My son found a squirrel, but I wouldn't let him bring it into the house. He said it was safe. Who was right? Now, you know, it's whether this is just, hi, I found this squirrel, he wants to come to dinner, or mom, look, it hurt its paw. She didn't say.
It depends a lot on how old the squirrel is. Squirrels are very engaging and adorable when they're babies, but they do grow up to be squirrels, and they chew through wood, and they crack nuts, and they can bite through a pair of welder's gloves. So if it was a little baby squirrel, it was probably scared and fairly safe, but still, you do need to be careful. You know, they can have fleas and mites and things like that that you don't necessarily want in your house.
Okay.
The weather is also a factor. I mean, if it was really nasty out, I probably would have let the squirrel in my house.
Okay.
But I have caged it.
This, it's very true. I'm not sure that these people had a cage. Now, this it's a hard one to answer, but it's important. Rob from Piscataway, New Jersey wants to know, when do you know if an animal is too far gone to save, and what do you do? I guess he means when you find it.
Yeah. That is an important question, and it's one that most rehabbers get asked in the interview they get when they get their license. We have to be ready to face euthanasia because that sometimes is the kindest option. You know, sometimes people will bring me a bird that's a real train wreck, and I know that it isn't going to make it. There's exposed bone. The bone is dried out. It's started to die. There could be infection. There could be all kinds of nasty things. And frequently, it's a judgment call. Sometimes I provide hospice care. I will just administer pain medications and offer that bird a warm, dark, quiet place to do its dying. Other times, I know that this is a really fierce animal, and it's scared, and it's sick. And at that point, I go to the vets because they're in a much better situation to provide the safe handling required for euthanasia.
So when you say you take a vet, if you found a bird of prey that was badly, badly damaged, rather than just leave it, you take it to the vet and find a way. Okay.
Yep. I've done that with several ospreys, actually, because they just don't know when to quit. And you know, they're scared, they're in pain. It's just a kinder thing to do.
Do you live where there are a lot of ospreys? That's not exactly something that's common here outside of Albany, New York.
Yeah, up along the St. Lawrence River, they are extremely common. And they're when they get in trouble, it's usually bad because they are single-minded hunters. All they're looking at is what they're going after. They don't notice boat traffic, car traffic, or sometimes large objects. And they, when they fly into things, it's usually a really bad collision. And, you know, they rely on those shoulders and wings to dive into the water to catch fish. And their talons are very important. And if any of those is injured beyond use, they have no life, and they're extremely easily stressed in captivity. They won't self-feed in captivity. If you have more than one in captivity, they will feed simply because they're that competitive. But it requires two people to feed one.
Well, aren't there an awful lot of birds that can't be released in the wild because of some injury that end up in, with raptor shows and people going around teaching people about animals?
Yep. Education so facilities, zoos. And that's a really good place for a bird that can't take care of itself in the wild. In some of those situations, those birds actually can become foster parents to orphaned young raptors.
Tell me, where did you see this happen?
I haven't, but I know it does. I don't know anybody that does that personally, but I know it does happen. I know there are places where they might have an owl, say, who is permanently unflighted, but can teach young owl babies how to catch mice and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one. I'm not quite sure how you're going to answer it. Janet from Johnstown, Pennsylvania says, my daughter is scared of animals. Would working with a rehabilitator in some form help her get over her fears?
Maybe. You know, is it all animals? Is it wild animals? Is it domestic animals? I mean, there are plenty of people who do domestic rescue who need people to help them. There are people who do farm animal rescue. I know there's a lady down there in Pennsylvania who has a rescue farm, and she gets domestic and farm animals. What is the name of it? I think it's Greenacres.
So it would be better for this child to go and help rescue poor abused cows than an osprey, is I think what you're saying.
Definitely. But, you know, any rehabber would realize that this was a situation where the child needed to be around a very gentle species, preferably something cute and fuzzy. You know, but that could even be baby chickens and turkeys. I mean, they're cute little ducks.
Well, that leads us to the next question, which I have to admit is my very favorite one. The question is, what was the biggest animal you ever saved? Did you get to ride it? This is from Macy, who is 6 years old and from Utica, New York.
Well, I don't think she's thinking dragons. Large mammals, so riding anything that I've rescued would be out of the question. But my spirit has flown off with a few birds on occasion. I've had some large owl babies that I've taken care of. Usually I turn raptors over to Jean Soprano down at Kindred Kingdoms because she has an excellent setup to take care of them, and she is just an incredible rehabber. But I haven't ever gotten to ride off on anything. And
do you know
I wouldn't advise anyone to try riding a wild animal anyway.
So that's again, if you rescue cows and donkeys, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
And yeah, the next one, you know, close to my heart. What about all the dangers with ticks and fleas and Lyme disease and all of that? This is from Scott in Woburn, Mass. And I agree with Scott. I mean, I live in upstate New York. Lyme disease is rampant. To the point where if we take our cat out, we spray him first, we walk him on a leash with a harness, and then we take him back in and we check him.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're bringing in wildlife, part of me says, y'all are asking for it. What do you
How
do you stay safe?
I think probably if you were working with some of the large mammals like deer, yeah, that would be a factor. Or some of the larger canines, coyotes, wolves. I have a friend who rehabs bears. I've never heard of any problem with ticks, but anybody who's concerned about ticks in their neighborhood, and they should be, you want to get hold of some geranium oil and make yourself a little water spray. Just put maybe, 1/16 of an ounce of oil in the bottom of a 2-ounce spray bottle. And top it off with some distilled water and shake it and spray it. Wear your pants tucked in. You know the drill if you live in tick country. Spray everything. Check yourself over. I have not had any animals come in with ticks. I have had animals come in with fleas. I've had animals come in with flies. If anybody ever tries to rescue small mammals and they have a lot of fleas, best to just use kitten flea powder if you use anything. You can really injure an animal by exposing it to a lot of chemicals. So it's just best to make that animal a bed in a box with an old towel or t-shirt you don't care about and get it to a rehabber, because we understand this and we'll deal with it.
Okay. And the last question I have for you is from Kiki, and Kiki is from Santa Fe, New Mexico. She says, did you ever have trouble letting go? And I think by that she means an animal that you just bonded with and it,
oh, yeah.
and you had those second thoughts.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
I can keep this one.
Sure. The thing is, everybody who interacts with these animals gets attached to them to one degree or another. I do my best to let people know what happens, even if the story isn't a happy ending. And yes, I have a Squirrel Girl, my first little red squirrel, taught me so much, and it was really hard to give her up. But she was ready to go. And even though I wasn't quite as busy then as I am now, I knew that there were others waiting in line. That my mother used to say, nature abhors a vacuum. And no sooner does somebody leave, that somebody else is going to show up who needs my help and my energy. So, you know, it's just a little piece of your heart goes with every one of them. I am blessed to work with them. I learn a lot, and I'm constantly amazed at the combination of fragility and strength that exists almost in equal measure in all of these creatures. And, you know, just their uniqueness, their place in the environment, what they do for the environment by being there. You know, they're all part of the system. They're all important. Even the ones we don't necessarily think are cute or wonderful.
So we're coming close to the end of the show. If you were going to wrap up what we've talked about today, Surin, your little, if you will, 2-minute elevator speech mm-hmm. to people who are curious about this, who want to understand it better, who maybe want to do it, mm-hmm. what would that little 2-minute elevator speech be?
Okay. If we're talking to people who are thinking they want to save somebody on the side of the road or in the backyard or whatever, somebody they've discovered, keep yourself safe. Prepare a box or carrier. Keep the animal warm, dark, and quiet. Wash your hands when you're done. Pick up the phone and find a rehabber. Don't feed them anything. Don't feed them milk. If it's a baby bird and it's gaping for food, please don't use a dropper full of water to give it a drink, because birds have an air pipe under their tongue and their throat is over their tongue. And if you flood their mouth with water, it will all go into their lungs and they'll die. And nobody wants to have that experience, especially the bird. Do your best to take care of the environment. That will keep the animals around you healthy and give them a place to live. Loss of habitat is the worst challenge animals face. Talk to your vet or your local environmental conservation organization. I know they have different names in every state. Most of them can fill you in on who is rescuing animals, whether you want to work with domestics or wild. And if you find some people who will work with you, they can help you find out what the steps are in your location. It's very rewarding. It's very time-consuming. Occasionally, it's heartbreaking. But it's just another way to give back to your community.
Surin, we so much appreciate your time with us today. I think this is going to be one that a lot of people are going to be downloading and sharing. If you need to find me, Corby Mitlide, when I'm not on the air, you can find me at firethroughspirit.com, Fire Through Spirit on Facebook, Corby Mitlide on Twitter. Find me at Best Psychic Directory and ESP Psychics if you need a quick touch base for a reading. or just call 877-321-CORBY. That's 877-321-2672. Have a wonderful and terrific week. And as you go about your next 7 days, look at the little ones around you, winged folk, feather folk, turtles, raccoons, anybody out there who is not your typical domestic, and tip your hat. Let them know that even if they don't need you to rehab them, you appreciate them being in your space. Till next week, have a great one. We'll see you then.